16. In a small modern office, with one of the new Spider-Mobiles dangling above him, Nick Appleton listened listlessly to piped-in music. Right now, the damn thing was playing selections from Victor Herbert. Oh, Christ, Nick thought wearily. He sat hunched over, his head in his hands. Charlie, he thought, are you alive? Are you hurt, or are you okay? He decided that she was okay. Charlie wouldn't get snuffed by anyone. She would live to a full lifespan, to well over 112 years, the population average. I wonder if I can get out of here, he thought. He found himself faced by two doors, one through which they had come, the other leading to inner, more esoteric offices. Cautiously, he tried the knob of the first door. Locked. So, with utter stealth, he approached the door leading to the inner offices. He turned the knob, held his breath, and found it locked, too. And it set off an alarm. He could hear it clanging. Damn, he said savagely to himself. The inner door opened. There stood Police Director Barnes, impressive in his well-decorated green uniform, the lighter green variation worn by top police circles only. Cautiously, he tried the knob of the first door. Locked. So, with utter stealth, he approached the door leading to the inner offices. He turned the knob, held his breath, and found it locked, too. And it set off an alarm. He could hear it clanging. Damn, he said savagely to himself. The inner door opened. There stood Police Director Barnes, impressive in his well-decorated green uniform, the lighter green variation worn by top police circles only. They stood, staring at each other. 3XX24J, Director Barnes asked. Nick Appleton. 3XX24J is an apartment address, and not even my own. Or it was. Your men have probably looted it by now, looking for coordinate material, he thought, then for the first time, about Cleo. Where is my wife? He demanded. Was she hurt or killed? Can I see her? And my son, he thought. Him, especially. Barnes twisted his head, called back over his shoulder. Check 7Y3ZRR and see if the woman's in good condition. The boy, too. Let me know at once. He turned back to confront Nick. You don't mean that girl you had with you in that room at the 16th Avenue printing plant. You mean your legal wife.
I want to know about both of them, Nick said.
The girl with you at the plant is just fine. He did not elaborate, but there it was. Charlie had survived. He thanked God for that. Do you have any more questions you want to ask me before we meet with the council chairman?
Nick said, I want an attorney.
You can't have one because of the enabling legislation passed last year forbidding legal representation to anyone already arrested. An attorney couldn't have helped you anyhow, even if you had seen him before your arrest, because your crime is political in nature.
What's my crime? Nick said.
Carrying coordinate literature. That's 10 years in a relocation camp. Being in the presence of other known coordinates. 5 years. Found in a building where illegal written material.
I've heard enough, Nick said. About 40 years in all.
As it stands in the books. But if you're helpful to me and the council chairman, perhaps we can run your sentences simultaneously. Let's go in.
He pointed at the open door and Nick, wordlessly, passed on through, into a gloriously decorated office. Or was it an office? A huge bed filled half the room, and in the bed, propped up on pillows, lay Willis Graham, supreme ruler of the planet, his lunch on a tray resting on his middle. Scattered over the bed was every kind of written material possible. He made out the color codes of a dozen government departments. It did not appear that they had been read. They were too perfect in condition. Mint.
Miss Knight, Willis Graham said into the face microphone, adhering to one flabby jowl. Come take these chicken a la king-type dishes away. I'm not hungry.
A slender, almost bosomless woman entered and whisked the tray away.
Would you like some...
she began, but Graham cut her off with a chopping motion of his hand. She became instantly silent and continued on out of the room with the tray.
You know where my food comes from? Willis Graham asked Nick. The building cafeteria, that's where. Why the hell...
he was speaking now to Barnes.
Why the hell didn't I set up a special kitchen for myself alone? I must be insane. I think I'll resign. You new men are right. We're just freaks, we unusuals. We're not forged from the right material to rule.
Nick said, I could take a cab over to a good restaurant like Flores and pick you up.
No, no, Barnes said sharply.
Graham turned to glance at him with curiosity.
This man is here for an important reason, Barnes said hotly. He's not a domestic servant. If you want a better lunch, send out one of your staff. This is the man I told you about.
Oh, yes, Graham said, nodding. Go ahead. Interrogate him.
Barnes seated himself in a stiffly upright chair of the mid-1820s period, probably French. He brought forth a tape recorder, touched the on button.
Your identity, Barnes said.
Nick, seating himself on an overstuffed chair facing Barnes, said, I thought I was brought here to see the council chairman.
You were, Barnes said. Chairman Graham will intervene from time to time to inquire further about the matter at hand.
Am I correct, council chairman?
Yeah,
Graham said, but his heart didn't seem to be in it.
They're all exhausted, Nick thought. Even Graham. Especially Graham. It's been the waiting. It's undermined them. Now that the enemy is here, they are too enervated to respond.
Except, he thought, they did do a good job on the 16th Avenue press. Perhaps the ennui did not extend down to the lower levels in the police hierarchy. Perhaps only those at the top who knew the real situation. He stopped his thoughts abruptly.
Interesting material circulating in your mind, Graham the telepath said.
That's right, Nick said. I forgot.
You're absolutely right, Graham said. I'm exhausted. But I can be exhausted most of the time. The work is carried on by department heads who I have complete trust in.
Your identity, Barnes said. 7Y3ZRR, but more recently, 3XX24J, Nick said, capitulating at last.
Earlier today, you were arrested at a Cordnite printing plant. Are you an underman?
Yes, Nicholas Appleton said. A moment of silence passed.
When, Barnes said, did you become an underman?
A follower of the demagogue Corden and his vicious publications that...
I became an underman, Nick said, when we got back the results of our son's civil service test. When I saw how they had managed to test him on the basis of questions he could never possibly know or understand. When I realized that all my years of trust in the government had been wasted. When I recalled how many people had tried to wake me up and had not so done. Until the test results came in and, in reading over the Xerox copy of the test, realized Bobby had never had a chance. What are the components predicted by Black's formula which will result in a network seizure on a single molecule deep surface if the original entities at work are still operating, or if the original entities are operating either alive or as if alive in eigenwelts that overlap only one
Black's formula, comprehensible only to new men, and they required a child to formulate a resultant pari passu based on the postulates of the unfathomable system.
Your thoughts are still of interest, Graham said. Can you tell me who administered your son's test?
Norbert Weiss, Nick said. It would be a long time before he forgot that name. And another man's name was on the document, Jerome something, Pikeman.
So, Barnes said, Earl Zeta's effect on you made its appearance only after this episode with your son. Up until then, what Zeta pontificated had no...
Zeta never said anything, Nick said. It was the news of Corden's impending execution. I saw the effect on Zeta, and then I realized that...
He lapsed into silence.
I had to protest, he said, in some way.
Earl Zeta opened the door to that way. We had a drink. Breaking off, he shook his head, trying to clear it. The tranquilizer was still active in his system.
Alcohol? Barnes asked. He made a holographic note of that, using a small plastic notebook and a ballpoint pen which he held nearsightedly up to his face.
Well, Graham said, as the Romans said in vino veritas. Do you know what that means, Mr. Appleton?
There is truth in wine. Barnes said caustically, there is also the saying, that's the bottle talking.
I believe in vino veritas, Graham said, and belched. I've got to eat, he said plaintively. Miss Knight, he said into his face microphone, send out to, where did you say, Appleton? That restaurant?
Flores, Nick said. Their Alaskan baked salmon is a divine delight.
Where did you get the pups? Barnes asked alertly to Nick, to eat in a place like Flores, on your income as a tire groover.
Nick said, Cleo and I went there once, on our first anniversary. It took a week's pay, including the tips, but it was worth it. He had never forgotten it. He never would.
With a curt gesture, Barnes continued with his interrogation. So smoldering resentments, which might never have risen to the level of acting out, these resentments became action when Earl Zeta presented you with a way of implementing your feelings by joining the movement. Had he not been an underman, your resentments might never have reached the surface.
What are you trying to prove? Graham asked, annoyed.
That once we destroy the axle of the undermen, once we get men like Corden.
We did, Graham pointed out.
To Nick, he said,
did you know that? That Corden died of a long-term liver condition, which was irreversible and no transplant was available. You heard it on the radio, TV?
I heard it, Nick said, that he had been shot to death by an assassin sent to his cell.
That's not true, Graham said. He didn't die in his cell. He died on the operating table of the prison hospital during an attempt to put an artificial organ in him. We did everything we could to save him.
No, Nick thought. No, you didn't.
You don't believe me?
Graham said, reading his mind. He turned toward Barnes.
There's your statistic. The embodiment of natural man, of old men, and he doesn't believe Corden died naturally. Can we extrapolate from that that there will be a general planet-wide disbelief?
Sure can, Barnes said.
Well, damn it, Graham said. I don't care what they believe. It's all over for them. It's just rats here and there in the gutter, waiting for us to zarp them one by one. Wouldn't you say that, Appleton? Joiners like you, you don't anymore have a place to go and leaders to listen to.
To Barnes, he said,
so when Provoni lands, there won't be anybody to greet him. No throngs of the faithful. They'll have melted away, as Appleton here would do. Only he got caught, so it's Southeast Utah for him, or Luna, if he prefers. You prefer Luna, Mr. Appleton? Mr. 3XX24J?
Nick said, choosing his words carefully. I've heard it said that whole families have gone intact to relocation camps. Is that true?
You want to be with your wife and son? But they're not charged.
Barnes bared a notched fang, pursuing the idea to its conclusion.
We could charge them with...
You'll find a tract of Corden's in our apartment, Nick said. As soon as he said it, he wished, God, how he wished he hadn't said it. Why did I do that? He asked himself. But we should be together. And then he thought of little tough Charlie with her large black eyes and her pushed-in nose, her hard, slim, breastless body, and always her cheery smile, like a character out of Dickens, he thought. A chimney sweep, a Soho thug, conning her way out of trouble, talking someone into something. Anyhow, talking, and always with her special lit-up smile, as if the world were a great furry dog which she longed to hug.
Could I go with her, he wondered, instead of Cleo and Bobby? Should I go with her, if it's legally possible?
It's not, Graham said from his bed of enormous size.
What's not? Barnes demanded.
Graham said leisurely, he wants to go with that girl we found him with at the 16th Avenue printing plant. You remember her?
The one you're interested in, Barnes said. Hot fear trickled its way down Nick's spine. His heart
gave a deep shudder and a mighty heave, and in his arms and legs, the blood circulation speeded rapidly up. Then it's true about Graham, he thought, what people say about his wenching around. His marriage
is like yours,
Graham finished for him. Presently, Nick said, you're right.
What's she like?
Feral and wild, but he didn't have to say aloud, he realized. All he had to do was think of her, imagine her, relive in his mind the details of their short period together, and Graham would gather it up as fast as he thought it.
She could be trouble, Graham said, and this Denny, her boyfriend, he sounds psychopathic or something. The whole interaction between them, if you're remembering it right, it's sick. She's a sick girl.
In a sane environment, Nick began, but Barnes cut him off. May I go on with my questions?
Sure, Graham said, moodily withdrawing.
Nick saw the heavyset old man turn his attention inward, to his own thoughts. If you were released, Barnes asked, what would your reaction be? What would you do if, and I say if, Thor's Provoni returned, and with monstrous help? Help designed to enslave Earth for as long as...
Oh, God!
Graham groaned. Yes, Council Chairman? Barnes asked.
Nothing,
Graham groaned. He rolled over on his side, his gray hair spilling onto the whiteness of the pillows, discoloring as if something that shunned the light had made its way among them, showing only its stringy pelt. Would you react in one of the following ways? Barnes continued. One, would you be hysterically joyful without reservation? Two, would you be wildly pleased? Three, would you not care? Four, would it make you uneasy? Five, would it cause you to join a PSS or military organization prepared to fight the unnatural invaders? Which of these choices, if any, would you choose? Nick said, isn't there something between hysterically joyful without reservation and mildly pleased? No, Barnes said. Why not? We want to know who our enemies are. If you were hysterically joyful, you would act to help them. But if you were only mildly pleased, you'd probably do nothing. That's what is being sorted out by the choices. Would you act as an overt enemy of the establishment, and if so, in what direction and to what extent? Graham, his voice muffled by his covers, muttered,
he doesn't know! My God, he just became an underman this morning! How the hell would he know how he'd act?
But, Barnes pointed out, he's had years to think about Provoni's return, don't forget that. His reaction, whatever it is deeply grounded. To Nick, he said, choose an answer. After a pause, Nick said, it depends on what you do with Charlie.
Try and extrapolate that, Graham said to Barnes, and chuckled. I can tell you what's going to be done to Charlie. She'll be brought here, safe from the demented psychopath, that Denny or Benny or whatever his name is. So you shook off the purple sea cow, very good. But she may have been lying when she said no one else ever had. You didn't think of that. She wound you around her little pseudo-podium, didn't she? All of a sudden, you were saying to your wife, if she goes, I go, and your wife said, go, which you did, and all that without any warning. You brought Charlotte to your apartment, made up a lie as to how you got involved with her, and then Cleo found the coordinate track, and blam, that was it. Because it gave her what a wife likes best, a situation in which her husband has to choose between two evils, between two choices neither of which is palatable to him. Wives love that. When you're in court, divorcing one, you get presented with a choice between going back to her or losing all your possessions, your property, stuff you've hung on to since high school. Yeah, wives really like that.
He buried himself deeper into the pillows.
Interview's over,
he mumbled sleepily. My conclusions, Barnes said.
Okay, Graham said, muffledly.
This man, 3XX24J, Barnes said, indicating Nick, thinks in a manner parallel to your own. His primary concern is for his own personal life, not for a cause.
If he is assured of possession of the woman he wants, if and when he finally decides, then he will stand by inert when Provoni arrives.
Which leads you to infer what? Graham mumbled.
Barnes said briskly, that we announce today, now, that all relocation camps, both in Utah and on Luna, are to be abolished, and the detainees will be returned to their homes and families, or whomever else they wish. Barnes' voice was jagged with harshness. We will, before Provoni arrives, give them what 3XX24J here wants, would settle for. Old men live on a personal level. It is not the cause, the ideology, that motivates them. If they do enter a cause, it is to get back something in their personal lives, such as dignity or meaning, like better housing, interracial marriage. You understand? Shaking himself like a wet dog, Graham sat up in bed and stared at him, his mouth turned down, his eyes bulging, as if, Nick thought, he's going to have a stroke.
Release them? Graham asked. All of them? Like the ones we picked up today? Hardcore, even wearing uniforms of some kind of paramilitary type?
Yes, Barnes said. It's a gamble. But on the basis of what Citizen 3XX24J has said and thought, it's obvious to me that he is not thinking, will Thor's Provoni save Earth? He is thinking, I'd certainly like to see that tough little bitch again.
Old man, Graham muttered, his face relaxed.
Now his flesh hung in waddles.
If we gave Appleton his choice between having Charlotte or seeing Provoni be successful, he'd actually choose the former.
But then all at once, his expression changed. It became furtive, cat-like.
But he can't have Charlotte. I'm involved with her.
To Nick, he said,
you can't have her, so go back to Cleo and Bobby.
He grinned.
There, I've made the decision for you.
Clearly annoyed by the discussion, Barnes said to Nick, what would your reaction as an underman be? If all the relocation camps, let's face it, the concentration camps, were abolished and everyone was sent home, presumably to his friends and family. How would you feel if this were done for you, you too?
Nick said, I think it's the most sensible, humane, rational decision a government could make. There would be a wave of relief and happiness that would cover the globe.
He felt somehow that he had expressed himself badly, in cliches, but it was the best he could do.
Would you really do that? He asked Barnes incredulously. I can't believe it. The number of people in those camps run into millions. It would be one of the most humane decisions by any government in history. It would never be forgotten.
You see, Barnes said to Graham. Okay, 3XX24J. If this were done, how would you greet Provoni?
He saw the logic.
He hesitated. Provoni went in search of help in destroying a tyranny. But if you release everyone, and presumably you would abolish the category of undermen, there would be no more arrests.
No more arrests, Barnes said. Coordinate literature will be allowed to circulate freely.
Rousing himself, Graham rolled about in his bed, heaving and thrashing, managing at last a sitting position.
They take it as a sign of weakness. He waggled his finger, at first Nick, then more ominously at Barnes. They would assume we did it as a result of knowing ourselves to be defeated. Provoni would get the credit.
He stared at Barnes in a mixture of emotions. His face flowed, mobile and agitated.
You know what they'd do. They'd then force us to...
He glanced at Nick a little nervously.
To make the civil service exams on the level. In other words... We'd give up our absolute control over who comes into the governmental apparatus and who goes out.
We need brain help, Barnes said, chewing on the flat end of his ballpoint pen.
You mean another double-dome Superman like yourself?
Graham spat out the words.
To overrule me? Why don't we have a plenipotentiary meeting of the Extraordinary Committee for Public Safety? At least that way we'll have your kind and my kind equally represented.
Barnes said thoughtfully, I would like to have Amos Ild brought in, to get his opinion. It would take 24 hours to assemble the committee.
We could have Ild here in half an hour. He's in New Jersey, working on the Big Ear, as you know. That fucking enemy of the unusuals. Up yours, Barnes. Up yours all the way. I'll never submit to the opinions of a head shaped like a pear with God knows what loose nuts and bolts floating around inside.
Barnes said, Ild is the foremost intellectual on the planet today. We recognize him as that. Obviously, you do too.
Dithering, Graham said, he's trying to make me obsolete. He's trying to destroy the two-entity system that has made this world a paradise for...
Then I'll merely go ahead and have the camps opened, Barnes said, with no concurring or dissenting opinions from anyone. He rose to his feet, put his pad of paper and pen away, picked up his briefcase.
Isn't it true? Graham asked. Isn't he trying to undermine the unusuals? Isn't that the real purpose of the Big Ear?
Amos Ild, Barnes said, is one of the few new men who has any concern for the old. The Big Ear would give them parity powers, abilities equal to your own. It would draw them into the fabric of government. Citizen 3XX24J, his son, could pass the ability test, the special achievement section that got you into the government years ago. And look how high you've risen. Listen to me, Willis. The old men must be given back their franchise. But there's no use doing it if they simply lack, goddamn, simply lack the skills, knowledge, aptitudes that we have. We're not really falsifying the test results. All right, we do it now and then. We select as Pikeman and Weiss did in Citizen 3XX24J's case. That's an evil, but not the evil. The evil lay in constructing a test which you and I could pass and he can't. We're not testing him by what he can do, but by what we can do. So he gets questions involving Bernhard's theory of acausality, which no old man can understand. We can't give him a bigger cerebral cortex. We can't give him a new man brain. But we can provide him with extra talents that can compensate for it. As in your case. In all unusual cases.
You're looking down at me, Graham said.
Barnes, still on his feet, sighed and sagged.
Well, I've said all I can say right now. It's been a difficult day. I will not contact Amos Ild. I will simply go ahead and order the camps let open, making it my own decision, mine alone.
Find Amos Ild. Bring in Amos Ild, Graham grated and heaved about on the bed so that the floor under their feet vibrated.
Looking at his watch, Barnes said, right. Within the next couple of days as a certainty, but it will take time to get him.
You said half an hour, Graham said.
Barnes reached for one of the phones on Graham's desk. May I?
Sure,
Graham said resignedly. While Barnes made his call, Nick stood deep in thought, gazing out the immense window of the combination bedroom office at the city around him, the city which stretched for miles, hundreds of miles.
You're thinking, Graham said, of ways of persuading me that you have a prior claim on that Charlotte girl.
He nodded.
You do, Graham said, but it doesn't matter, because I'm who I am, and you're who you are, a tire groover. I'm passing a law against it, by the way. You'll be out of a job come next Monday.
Thanks, Nick said.
You always did feel guilty about it, Graham pointed out. I pick up deep guilt from your mind. You worried about the people driving those squibs with the fake tread. Landing. Especially landing. That first bump.
True, Nick said.
Graham said, now you're thinking about Charlotte again, and devising ways of hustling her off, and at the same time you're asking yourself for the millionth time what you ethically should do. You can stop that and go back to Cleo and Bobby, and arrange for Bobby to take another...
I'll see her again, Nick said.